Hi, I'm Jared Fuller. Welcome to Scratching the Surface. One publishes to find comrades. That's a quote from the French poet and writer André Breton that I find myself repeating often. I think about this quote a lot. I recite this quote to my students. One publishes to find comrades. Publishing is an inherently social activity. One puts an idea out into the world and then a public gathers around it. Networks are created, communities are formed. To publish is to start a conversation, to find others interested in the same things that you are, to create new discourses. I think about this in my own work. So much of this show is about finding comrades. It's about entering into and creating a network of people, putting them in dialogue with each other. This idea, I think, is also the mission of Drawdown Books, a publisher and online bookshop featuring books about graphic design, about typography, and printed matter. I've been buying publications from Drawdown for almost 10 years and admire the community that they've built around finding different ways to talk about design in every sense. In fact, the brains behind Drawdown, Kathleen and Christopher Sloboda, my guests today, started Drawdown in search of a network because they wanted to be a part of a wider community. What started as a platform for them to experiment with publishing projects back in 2012 has grown into a full online shop and regular presence at art book fairs around the world where they sell their curated selection of design books. They also work as graphic designers for clients and teach at Boston University, RISD, and the University of Connecticut. Previously, Christopher was the director of graphic design at the Yale University Art Gallery for 15 years, and Kathleen worked as an archivist at the Beinecke Rare Book Library at Yale. In this conversation, we talk about publishing as a form of community building, the labor of distribution, building an expanded practice, and how all of this work has informed their work as teachers in the classroom. I felt an immediate kinship with what Christopher and Kathleen are doing and really admire how they think about this work. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Speaking of community, if you like this episode and what we do here at Scratching the Surface, I hope you consider supporting us on Patreon. The community we're trying to build on Patreon get bonus interviews, full transcripts, and an exclusive monthly newsletter. All of this while helping keep the show free for everyone all the time. You can head over to patreon.com/surfacepodcast to sign up and get all the details. Thank you so much for listening. And here is my conversation with Kathleen and Christopher Sloboda. Let's start by sort of jumping in a time machine, going back to 2012. You have a sort of independent practice. Christopher, you're working at the Yale Art Gallery. You're doing sort of illustration type work. And then you decide that you want to do a different kind of work. You want to publish your own projects. Put me in that space. What were you doing at that time? And what was the drive to kind of create this other side of your practice?
Well, yeah, Kathleen and I were involved in designing a lot of publications for, you know, other clients at the Yale Art Museum. I was designing a lot of publications. We had a pretty robust exhibition and publication schedule. And we're learning a lot because we're on press a lot about ways to print books for photographers and print books for art, and really love the artists, the art that we're working with in the content, but we had other interests too in what we thought would be interesting to publish and sort of experiment with what we were learning. I think we went to the New York Art Book Fair and, you know, really loved the energy that was happening. And Kathleen is like, we should be a part of this. And I think that was kind of the impetus, wouldn't you say, Kathleen?
I think that was a defining moment. And I find that's true for many people who start presses and speaking about artist book fairs. I've often cited them as sort of pollination events because people go to them, experience it. The bar to entry is very low. I mean, you just have to start doing something, start publishing, and you can be a part of this community. So that event, I think it was the 2011 New York Art Book Fair, was really formative for us. And I think also it spoke to, at least for me, I was a freelance at this point. So Chris is working in-house at Yale at the art museum, but I really didn't have like a social part to my practice. And the idea of having a community of makers to connect with was just so very appealing. So I would say, and I think this is a truism for so many people, that it started by going to a book fair and actually seeing what that community felt like, and that was what spurred our interest in starting our own press.
And I'd also say there was, you know, we were doing graphic design. I was doing strictly graphic design at the museum. And then Kathleen and I had this practice of doing sort of photo illustration and more experimental sort of design adjacent experiments where we're playing with 2 and 3D spaces. And you know, we kind of tried to keep those worlds separate. And then we also sometimes would create all of this work that we didn't really know what to do. There was a lot of like magazines like Festetic, the Fast Aesthetic, that we'd contribute a piece to, and we were building a body of work, and we felt like starting our own place would be like a place that those things can live that seemed quite disparate. Like we just had all of these, we were working in different worlds, and we wondered how do we pull it together and kind of unify some of this work that felt pretty fragmented at different times.
So that starts to answer what my next question was going to be, because I'm interested in sort of what was missing in the work that you were doing that, sort of got you to start Drawdown and what would become Drawdown. And so I'm hearing this idea of community and networks, but then also this idea of like expanded practices or alternative practices, things that sort of live outside of that sort of traditional space. What was it about those things that you were interested in that you weren't getting just in the sort of day jobs that you were doing?
I think part of it was formal experimentation. I think when we started Drawdown, it was not what it is now. It was meant to be basically an arena for us to work through different ideas of practice and also to do it in a self-directed way, because a lot of the work that we were doing is heavily in collaboration with other people, with other stakeholders, oftentimes, you know, bringing to life other people's visions and collaborating with them to bring that vision forward. But really to art direct the publications ourselves, like very appealing at that time. And also, you know, in our client work, sometimes there were certain ideas that we wanted to do that we couldn't necessarily get clients to do or to take on. But we were like, well, what if we just did those for ourselves? Like this became sort of our environment where we could test out these ideas and just, you know, conceptually play with some of the things that we were more interested in. So it was really a framework for us to experiment, to make. And that has always been a part of our team-based practice. And I think one of the reasons we're active in so many different fields is, you know, we have very disparate backgrounds, but when we come together and we work through ideas, we can often uncover new ways of making and thinking. And so being, I don't know, being active outside of our day jobs was incredibly important to both of us and was always the practice that we had. Drawdown just sort of formalized it in a very specific and tangible way.
Yeah, I would say the name Drawdown comes from an ink drawdown. A lot of times people think that it's like we're really like drawing and it's either further because we do like photo illustration, but really neither Kathleen or I can draw. The process of an ink drawdown is if we're going to be printing a book and we want to see what a couple of Pantone colors look on maybe different stocks of paper, just that process of doing it to see what it looks like. I can see, oh, PMS 032 on this uncoated paper versus this coated paper versus this satin paper, you get different results. And we thought, what if that can be the sort of driving mechanism behind publishing, where we're really playing through different formats? So we did something on newsprint and like a broadside, and we were experimenting with the DVD or a series or a hardcover book. So we're kind of working, we were in the first few years really working through different formats like duotone printing, single color printing, right, and so on, just as a sort of formal experiment on the first level.
It's interesting to me, and you mentioned that it has evolved over the last 12 years, and we'll talk about that evolution in a second, but it's really interesting to me that early work, the early drawdown projects were this mix of sort of formal exploration, experimenting with formats and what you could do mm-hmm. with those formats. I'm thinking about all the early tote bags, especially. That's in my mind. It's like a very early drawdown sort of vibe, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, and we mentioned this like very briefly before we hit record, you know, 2012 to me in retrospect, and I've said this on the show a couple times, feels like that the early 2000s feel like this really interesting turning point in design and in graphic design, specifically in sort of design media and design discourse, where, you know, a lot of the sort of the print publications that dominated design discourse for so long had sort of lost their relevance, were not as central as they once were. Blogs and those types of sites were sort of on the way out. They were also losing that sort of centrality, but social media hadn't quite taken over yet. Like, that was still on the rise. We mentioned Tumblr before we hit record. Like, Tumblr feels very 2012 to me. And you do something that's printed, that's analog, that's playing with the physicality of these mediums. And it's really easy to do that and for it to feel nostalgic. And your work has never felt nostalgic to me. It's never felt like it was trying to go back or look back on some other era. It still feels very contemporary. Can you talk to me about the printedness of Drawdown and your interest in print, but print as something that is alive today, not something that's looking backwards?
We have two different approaches to that. So I'll let Christopher talk about his relationship with the book and printed work. And then I'll talk about my background and how that feeds into my thinking about working with tangible objects.
Yeah, I think, I mean, since I was probably in high school, I was always looking for ways to make printed things. I had like a hardcore punk fanzine. I would start bands just so that I can design the t-shirts and the cassette tape demos. And through that, like designing for my friends, you know, started a t-shirt company through college that was like sort of like exploring vegetarianism and animal rights and straight edge and hardcore and punk. So one of the projects that Kathleen and I did that is one of our bigger projects is a publication called Hardcore Fanzine. Yeah. And that was probably the first piece of graphic design I got when I was like a sophomore or a junior. One of my friends was like, "Ooh, you would love this fanzine." And it was done by a high school student in Chicago, and you would order it in the mail for like sending a dollar or, and I was just really taken by it. And I didn't really understand the impact of the design. You know, it was connecting me to this subculture that I was interested in, but the design was really well done. He didn't, you know, sometimes people involved in fanzines would go on to become designers, but that wasn't the case. Like Gabe Rodriguez was just interested in the content and the interview and supporting this community. And then, you know, as I was starting my own fanzine and comparing it, I was always like, this is like, there's something about it. And later I learned that Gabe's father was an offset printer. So he had access to, you know, printing these zines offset. And I didn't understand why it was better than everyone else's photocopied zine, but you know, the printing of it, I was just drawn to it. So Kathleen and I contacted him, I think it must've been 30 years later, to see if he had, we can do a book of all 7 issues that he put out. And he sent us all the mock-ups, like cut and paste, the actual color photographs. And then, you know, you were mentioning nostalgia. I have, pretty strong feelings against nostalgia. A lot of times, like projects that you might see within a particular subculture, people, they only invite back people who were part of the scene, and it just becomes this rehashing of like the memory. So we were really interested in not doing that with the fanzine, bringing in different voices who maybe weren't familiar with that that publishing project or weren't even familiar with that scene, and then assessing it based on, well, what were the typefaces that he was using, or you know, what was the production method of distribution, that kind of network. And I think it was we were really pleased with the way it was bridging different communities. So not just sitting within the nostalgia of that community that grew up with that or knows it or is part of that community now, but looking at really inviting people who weren't part of that to look at it and analyze it. And I think it even surprised Gabe because we wanted to call it Hardcore Fanzine and not Good and Plenty, which was the name of his publication. And he's like, yeah, but my fanzine was called Good and Plenty. And then after it came out, he's like, I get it. Like it's more of like a sampling of what, because there's so many other people that did zines very similar to Gabe all across the United States and the world. So it was really more of like a study of its ripple effects. And I think it was great that people trusted us, how it came out. And then Kathleen, I'll pass it to you.
So my background is in libraries and archives. That's what my master's degrees are in. I did a double degree at the University of British Columbia. And I worked as an archivist at Special Collections at the Beinecke Rare Book Library at Yale for several years. And that's actually how I met Christopher, because we were both working sort of in the cultural sector at Yale. And my relationship with printed matter is really kind of influenced by my work with doing preservation with audio and visual and digital material. The way that books travel and can be disseminated and can, you know, they're basically seeds of knowledge, like they're vessels of knowledge. Yeah. And that they're a format that's existed for hundreds of years that we know how to preserve, that has a legacy. So for me, this is just a tried and true model, and a way of activating that space for new generations is thinking about the way it can be a piece of continuity with different forms of media. And I think that's one of the things that, as we move forward, we'll draw down, I'm really interested in. But certainly, I think, Christopher and I have different sort of threads that pull us towards the printed work. And my goal, I think, is to create these things that feed into sort of, sometimes we're working and sort of trying to build out ideas about what graphic design is, or as Christopher and I seem to talk about a lot, like building bridges between different communities. Mm-hmm. And I think when you create these things that are in print, that they will be imprinted sort of in society in a way that's different with the digital materials, that though they're really prevalent, there's not really, preservation models in place for a lot of those. So I grow concerned about digital media as like the sole sort of carrier of social history and value and ethics. Yeah. So that's why print is like really, really appealing to me, because I know it works.
When Kathleen and I met in 2005, I think Facebook was just coming out. I mean, there was a feeling that like, ooh, it's on the internet, it will live forever. And then we found just like sites go down and, they're not archived and there's missing images and you're losing a lot of data that we felt like for a certain period, like confident, well, this is there now, it will be accessible. And, with the printed form, it's just a very reliable source of passing knowledge and information on. I can remember even at the museum, like in 2009, if we had to put 600 images in a book, people were like, oh, it might cost a lot. What if we put a CD-ROM in the back, and then people put that in there. And I was like really against the idea. Not that I had a time machine and could predict weren't going to be around, but would that book be as useful now, right? With the CD-ROMs and most of the images on that device, rather than being printed in the book, we'd still be able to access it on the printed page.
I see both of those stories and both of your backgrounds in very clearly in the DNA of Drawdown. And, I see that sort of the hardcore, the punk, the DIY ethos mixed with that sort of preservation, curatorial sort of eye too. And so, I'm interested in how this project that started as a way to explore things formally, to play with formats, to be a sort of experimental publisher, if we can call it that, and how that, when you sort of realized that you could actually be selling other people's books and other people's projects, and that this could be a curatorial project, it could be a storefront, that it didn't just have to be the work you were doing. How did that happen? And how did you start to think about what what else Drawdown could be.
I think one of the first small presses that we started to carry was Spectre Press, which is done by Sulky and Min in Seoul, Korea. So we were just like, wow, they're putting out all these great publications. Nobody can get them. So let's get some copies of it. And then we were really interested in how we can Drawdown can serve as a platform for making a lot of these great publications produced by schools or by other small presses available in one space to really share. And I think even with our teaching in classrooms, we're interested in like sharing the work beyond the classroom. And I'd say like in the spirit of even our publishing projects, a lot of them are like really reaching out to a lot of different people to contribute, you know, either a visual submission or a piece of writing. You know, we're not interested in necessarily just putting out a publication where only Kathleen and I are the people creating the content, but like, right, how can we bring in as many different voices and meet new people through that process and sort of see what happens? So I'd say both in the distribution and in the sort of publication, we're interested in sort of like bridging people from different circles and seeing kind of what happens within that space. And then I'll let Kathleen kind of speak to the sort of continued extension of what we might carry.
Well, to add in sort of an early piece as well, I think part of the reason we started carrying more work was in order to keep things sort of activated with Drawdown, because as you pointed out, Jared, you know, we have this very sort of complex constellation of work that we're doing. And so with Drawdown being something that we weren't solely devoted to, but we were doing sort of in our off hours or on weekends, especially at the beginning, as we were sort of ramping up, it became clear to us that we weren't going to be able to be consistently active or sort of publishing like the big publishing houses. And so how would we sort of maintain sort of energy and activity? And this corresponded to sort of our participation in Artist Book Fair. So, you know, we started to recognize that there were titles that didn't have distribution, like Sulky and Min's books from Korea. But there were also books that we were encountering and publishers that we were encountering at the book fairs, where we would meet incredible people, we would see their work, we would want to share their work. I think that's, it really comes from a spirit of wanting to share people's work and make it more broadly available. And that's where that curatorial impulse is initially coming from. So it's really, I think it always goes back to like these sites of activity for us and sort of carrying forward the book fair spirit and sort of cultivating that the online space. I think that's sort of what we started to want to do. Like that space to me just seemed so empowering to so many people. I mean, I love inviting students to go to fairs and see what it's like and to participate in them. Because as I said, I think it can just be like a really invigorating experience to find that there's an outlet for your creative expression, for your design practice that isn't necessarily, you know, dictated by others, or that can be a highly collaborative space for people. I think it's just the freedom of that making space, especially outside of the school where there's a lot of parameters, just seems really, really like to be a social good at this point. So cultivating that online was part of it. And then, you know, I suppose as we've gone on and we've been teaching, like we see that where there's resources that are needed, and we try and seek out those resources. So oftentimes we're doing sort of thesis work with a student and they'll have a particular interest. And I think my reference librarian backbone kicks in and I start to select materials based on those interests, or I just see sort of themes emerging in my conversations with other faculty, with students. Oftentimes I'll meet a particular person and then they'll tell me their interest, and I will start to try to facilitate that through the books that we're choosing. And then, you know, there's other things that we're particularly interested in, which is like expanding the canon of graphic design history, like complicating that. So it's become really important to us to carry, you know, the commercial titles that are available, to see that there is like a strong history of publishing with graphic design, a commercial practice, also an academic publishing practice that we want to support, but also to position those against self-publishing and work that's coming out of schools at the moment, because a lot of like the, you know, the essential reading of graphic design is 20, 30, sometimes you know,
Yeah.
70 years old. So where have current conversations and modes of making taken people, and sort of create an avenue for people to get that work out so it can be in conversation with those more commercial works. Like that's really become a very focused area for us. And then also some of our selection is about having examples of editorial design or book design. So sometimes we're collecting things that are, you know, architecture or performance art, but where the titles themselves have some sort of aspect to them that we think could enlarge the practice of graphic designers. So really, like we're an online boutique for graphic designers, type designers, and typographers, I think is how we've like now situated ourselves, but it's really sort of heavily focused on serving those communities.
And every book, because Kathleen does all the cataloging, will cite who the graphic designer is, right? So if you shop for books, you know, at Amazon and stuff, you're not going to see that. But if you really want to see, like, I really want to go buy a lot of books that Irma Boom designed, you know, that'll come up. And you can, so I think there's real emphasis on who created, who designed the books that we're offering.
I love that. And I really love this idea of being a bridge or sort of this network or this constellation of networks. And I think, you know, I don't want to make this about me or about scratching the surface, but I think that's why I felt a sort of kinship to what you are doing, because in many ways, that's what I feel like I am trying to do with this show, is try to give platforms for different types of people at different stages of their career from different backgrounds and disciplines, and get them to sort of talk to each other through me, you know,
exactly.
To show that, like, I don't know, like a pentagram partner and some, you know, just graduated student are actually sort of wrestling with similar things or thinking about similar things in their work or whatever. And I'm wondering how you think about that and making it inclusive in the sense that it is open and generative. I think a lot of times, you know, when you think of academic publishing, you know, you think of that as something that's like, oh, this is dense, this is hard to read, like this is not for me. Or as much as I love some of these indie publishers, the books just feel, you know, I just talked to Frank Lama of Set Margins about this, like, how do you make a book that people, you know, that invites people in? And when you're working across these different disciplines, when you're working across these different sort of subgroups, how do you make it so they can talk to each other and are inviting other people in who otherwise might feel like they're not a part of that?
Well, I think it depends what space we're working in, you know, because Drawdown operates online, and maybe that's the way a lot of people see us. Like, you know, we have a big social media presence, we have a very robust online presence, but a lot of the work that we also do happens at fairs, like in person. And that sort of presentation that we do, we're always selecting sort of a portion of our catalog, one that will travel well, but also that we think will serve the audience that we either know will be there, because sometimes it's, you know, fairs at schools that we're doing over and over again, or it's, you know, our anticipation, and it's sort of like a cross section of what we can offer. But having a range of titles at different price points that can talk to each other on the table, that people can encounter and look through and feel and smell and actually sort of work their way through is really important. And then I'm there, I hope, as a guide if they want it. I'm meant to be somebody who I intend to be somebody who can answer questions if they have them, but I'm more than happy to let people, you know, peruse on their own. And I think that's the same way that we operate online to some extent too, where there's a sense that people can find their own way through the catalog, but the social media aspect of it on the channels is us pointing out aspects of the different publications we carry that we think could be of interest. You know, and I think part of it too is just giving people permission to engage, because oftentimes, like you said, things can seem dense, things can seem not for them. I love this idea of the bridge. I think those metaphors that you mentioned, Jarrett, those are definitely things that are constantly in my mind as I think about the work that we do together. It's about creating connections for people. It's about inviting them to connect. It's about lowering any sorts of barriers for people, because, you know, design is a practice that a lot of people engage in without naming it. You know, like, people work with text and images all the time and are designing. It's like a human practice. And I think to recognize that you have a place in these titles, this dialogues about graphic design, but that you as a maker can access these. And there's many points of reference for you and access. I think that's really, you know, work that we do by having a real array of titles, but also by having that personal dimension whenever we can to sort of invite people in.
I mean, I do love the juxtaposition of, you know, how we can put, you know, a publication that maybe one of our students designed, like Chuck Gonzalez's beautiful thesis book, Pro Forma, that kind of looks at his, the influence of growing up in the Philippines on his design now, next to, you know, Carol Martin's or the 20-pound new pentagram book, Living by Design, that we got. It's like one book per box. But, you know, that as you're looking through it, then, you know, those things live next to each other, and the dialogue between seeing those two projects, one that might be, you know, 20, 30 years of a studio doing work, and the other is like, you know, 2 years of a body of work, at different stages of their career. So that's what really excites me, is the sort of bringing together these works from very different spaces.
And I will say, Jarrett, for us, you know, it's not us just looking outward and finding things. There's a real circularity where we have a submission arm of Drawdown. And we definitely pop this up whenever possible. And I'll say this here, we really invite submissions from around the world. And that's oftentimes how we're finding things. And we also get suggestions about things to carry or organizations to contact when we're at fairs talking to people. So a lot of sort of knowledge sharing that happens in conversation and these personal relationships that emerge. And when we travel, we also get to see work outside of the United States. And that's really important for us to sort of bring back a sort of more global perspective on graphic design. You know, a lot of the books that we like to carry too are bilingual, multilingual, are covering design traditions that aren't necessarily fully represented by publishing in the United States or Europe. I think that to me, I'm in La Pamuk. I'm a member of the First Nations Coldwater Indian Band, and the idea of having representation of a lot of different kinds of visual culture is very important to me. And having that sort of representation for younger professionals, for students who are just sort of encountering design to see themselves reflected back, or at least see ideas of how their practice might sort of connect with these earlier practices is really important. So that's also sort of a driving factor.
I have a weird question. This is a really weird question, I think. I was revisiting the publication that you put out a couple of years ago, I Got Something to Say, which is a collection of posters that you've all designed. And then there's contributors who are sort of writing. And I was thinking a lot about Ian Lynam's piece there about distribution and the labor of distribution. The fact that to run something like Drawdown, you have to be sourcing books, storing those books, then you pack them, you ship them, you generate the shipping label, you wrap them, you have the nice tape in the boxes. And I'm wondering if that labor, that sort of firsthand sort of experience of the infrastructure of this circulation, does that change how you think about what design is and what design can do and how we talk about design when you're actually sort of on the ground hacking these books and shipping them to people around the world?
Well, Kathleen likes to tell people at book fairs that we are packing them. Why do you like telling people that, Kathleen?
I think oftentimes, well, we recently introduced a new technique where we write every person's name, like we write a little note to everybody to reveal sort of the human labor, as you're talking about, Jarrett, seems really important as a dimension of this practice. And I think Ian does a really good job in that essay of talking about that work, because it is such a big part and such a demanding part, actually, of bookselling. And I think, It's in much Many ways. In graphic design, I've had a lot of conversations lately with different faculty and students about how there's so much emphasis in design in like the final product and what you see, the final thing that you see. But in fact, what graphic design is the process. And in our teaching, that's really what we focus on is the process. And well, I've become more and more interested in ways of surfacing that work. And I think to that end, maybe that is affecting the way that I think about our conversations of graphic design, and the work that we do that necessarily isn't as transparent, that is a little bit more opaque or buried, because it is part of the world of graphic design. Obviously, it's part of the process of this design practice that we've sort of built under the umbrella of drawdown, because it does offer you lots of opportunities as well to think about how you design, the different collateral that we're using, from the tape to the boxes, and thinking about, even the invoices and everything like that. There's all these ideas about design, but even I love systems thinking. So thinking about better systems to employ as you're doing this work is also, I think, some sort of connections back.
It's so funny that you brought up Ian's text, Jarrett, because I remember reading that. And Ian has a sort of mail order distribution called WordShape that he runs in Japan. And I was like, wow, we don't really think about other people doing what we do. And I just sort of, I don't know, I just hadn't seen it kind of vocalized or clear put out that process. And I was like, wow, I feel so seen, and I think because I have always, probably since high school, been involved in some sort of a mail order, so it's sort of second nature. Like before Kathleen and I started Drawdown, we had a project called Part of It, where we asked different designers and illustrators like Ryan Waller and Daniel Etok and Gockler and Sarah DeBont to pick a cause that they were interested in, and then they'd design a t-shirt and a tote bag, and then a portion of the profits went to the charity of their choosing. And that was really great. But I will say, when we transitioned to books, we were so happy to get out of t-shirts, because we were always running out of all the sizes. Like we'd get small, medium, large, extra large, like all the sizes, and someone would buy one of the designs, and then they'd want one of the sizes that we didn't have, because at that time the website was hard coded. There wasn't really like Shopify platform, so if we ran out of a size, we had to go and change it. And it was just really hard to maintain. But when we got to books, we were like, one, there's one book for that title, and then it became easier with the platforms. But even in high school and college, with the t-shirt company I started, I was also running this music mail order. And this was like pre-internet, where you would like get mailing lists and send the catalogs out, and then people would send you well-concealed cash, from Germany or from Europe. And then, trust that you're like sending it out there. So it's always been a way to connect with people, like even pre-internet. And I always think of it's and usually I'm interested in these scenes that are, have a very strong community. Like even now we carry type specimens, and there's a small community of people who are interested in designing type and looking at type and using type, that, the larger world isn't necessarily interested in, but the people who are interested in it are really interested in it. So I think that's I think why I always feel there's a need to sort of have the physical labor to like support, a place where people can go and get something that's very curated and very thoughtful, and you're not just kind of picking and choosing from places that aren't concerned about that.
I would also say it's not solely altruistic, though, the way that we're painting it. I mean, part of the reason that I love doing drawdown is that I get to see and look at all the books. And one of the issues that we had is that going to the New York Art Book Fair, it was just an really expensive for us, because we would want to collect all these examples of design. Like, we're huge book collectors ourselves. We love printed work. So I think the idea that drawdown could also be a way for us to experience this work in person and to share those experiences with others, like to sort of, maximize our energy here, but also in service of other people. I just want to make sure that it's not clear that it's also something that we really enjoy.
Yeah. No, I get that. I tell people all the time that this podcast is a completely selfish project for me to just get to talk to people smarter than me about things I'm interested in. So I don't, and then it happens to have a nice altruistic element to it, but it starts very selfishly. I want to, as we head into the end of the conversation, I want to talk a little bit about teaching because it's come up a couple times in your answers, and you both have been teaching for a long time. And I'm curious about how the experience of drawdown, everything that we've talked about so far, going to the book fairs, sourcing books, your own publishing projects, the labor of actually getting these books to people, how has that changed how you teach or how you think about how you talk about graphic design in a classroom setting?
I think ever since I was a student, I loved the university setting and being in school. And I think what one of it just feels like such a great place where people are creating such interesting things. I think one of the first drawdown projects that Kathleen and I talked about that hasn't come into fruition yet. But my office was next to the Yale School of Art, and there's a bit of a tradition there where students will design a poster for any upcoming talk, and they make, a one-off poster, and they hang it in the hallway, and everyone will do it. Like, you'll have multiple versions of it, but it just seemed like they were just disappearing, like, so we started to collect them over the years, and we have this hope to one day release this publication called One-Offs. That's just all these great posters, and we're starting to expand it to be on to other schools. But I think, how do you capture what's happening there is one way. There's just things that are being produced but not necessarily shared. And I think some people have tried to like create models where thesis books might be available, but then printing on demand and how many pages those books are, it ends up being kind of expensive. So I think in our own teaching, we one of the classes we teach at RISD, newly formed, like that is really like how do we publish and share some of the work that we're doing as experimental typefaces and other projects there. So we've also done public facing projects where there was an exhibition at Issa Gallery in Shanghai, China, or poster installations in New York City. So there's this weaving of like the publication and exhibition space and the way that that interacts with the classroom, in the way students can share their work beyond, with each other within that space. And certainly I would say, I know we learn a lot from students, and that will drive the way the kind of threads that Kathleen will like look at what kind of books to seek out, in terms of things that we carry as well. So I feel like it's this reciprocal relationship of us looking at ways to share work that we're doing in a classroom setting, but then the things that are interested to students and interested to other faculty and research that we're all doing does drive also the curation of titles and works that we might want to add to the sort of collection of books that we offer.
I'd also say, part of our teaching sometimes has a direct relationship with sort of the world of artist books and sort of publication. And that's the work that we do. And I mean, we've done workshops at the Otis School of Art and Design in LA, where we work with a team of students to develop a visual identity for a book fair. And then we organize the book fair, the art book fair with them on campus. And then, Christopher, when he was at Yale, he organized Odds and Ends Art Book Fair for 6 years. And that was the focus there was really on bringing together. Well, the long story is that the Yale Art Gallery, really is in proximity to the Yale School of Art, and collects every discipline represented in the Yale School of Art except graphic design. So graphic design is really held by the special collections on campus and not necessarily seen as like, it's not part of the art, but it's shifted a little bit in recent years. But Christopher, as the director of graphic design, he had a nice graphic that showed this. And so when there was this opportunity of there was an exhibition about book arts, the Alan Chazanoff Collection of Book Arts at Yale, the programming department was interested in sort of activating the sort of campus space in relationship to this exhibition. And so Christopher and some students work together, including Christopher. This is really your story to tell.
Well, I like what you're saying.
So I think Ashley James, who now works at the Guggenheim, was one of the PhD students who was a curator of that book art show, as well as some other really phenomenal students. And one of the reasons we've always enjoyed all of the work that we do is students are so energetic and so full of insight and so open to ideas. And Ashley came up with the name for that fair, Odds and Ends, in this idea that it could be inclusive. And one of Christopher's interests was really creating a space for the graphic designers in the design program at Yale to have a place to sort of connect with other graphic design programs. And so Odds and Ends had a really clear mandate at that point to reach out to design programs throughout the region and bring them into conversation with, you know, practicing publishers from New York, from Boston, from the region. And that became a model that we're really excited about, because there's a lot of art book fairs that have, like, I think the strength of art book fairs is they can take these different flavors and different subgroups or, you know, topical areas and sort of focus on them. And our experience has always been in creating these in-person experiences that draw together students and practitioners, and sort of, you know, watch what happens, what kind of cross-pollination can occur. And we've just seen so many great relationships develop out of them over the years. And so when Christopher left the Yale Art Gallery and started teaching at Boston University, he started Multiple Formats, which is a symposium and an art book fair now post-COVID, going into its third year. And that also has a focus on sort of, you know, bringing designers and artists who are teaching with artist books, like looking at different pedagogical models and connecting with librarians, artists. You know, Boston has a really thriving, you know, academic community here, and opening up avenues for people who are interested in artist books and book art to come together and really make connections. And so this has been sort of running alongside Drawdown and our practice, is this practice of organizing, you know, fairs, panels, opportunities for other people to sort of invigorate their practice. And that has a direct correlation to, you know, offering opportunities to students we're working with, students we're not working with, to participate as exhibitors, as volunteers, as moderators, take on all sorts of different roles that are really critical, and to get a taste of what it can be like if they wanted to sort of pursue practice in this area.
To Kath's point, I would say that what I loved about working at the Yale University Art Gallery was it is a teaching museum, and and the graphic design department, when I started and when I left, I believe, was in the education department, and I loved being in the education department and working with the educators, and I felt like really empowered by that mission that we're using design to educate and inform people. And sometimes there'd be talk like, well, should we move this to communications? And I'm like, no, you know, it's like, I want to be in the education department. And I feel that's where the exciting work can happen. What I felt was the more important work. And Kathleen touched on this, you know, slide I made and showed at many, many meetings, but as a graphic design student at the Yale School of Art, couldn't walk across the museum and see an interpretive exhibition about the history of graphic design. You know, it was really just artists. So I felt like my role as the director of graphic design, I can find other ways to get graphic design seen. And not just through the wayfinding and the magazine, but had different initiatives and projects over the years, like the calendar events covers had maybe 60 covers over from 2005 to 2012 with like Wim Crowell and Linda Van Dursen and Julia Bourne, just like creating custom type. And that started with Ed Fella saying yes, and then everybody else was easier to get to agree to do it afterwards. I was like, well, Ed Fella did the first one. I think Drawdown, if you think about it being the sort of marriage of a rare book librarian and then a graphic designer working at an art museum, I feel like that really brings together like the things that sort of drive and inspire Kathleen and I in the sort of different ways that we sort of operate and navigate where to take it.
I think that's a really nice way to wrap up this conversation. So I'm going to ask you the question I used to end all of these, which might actually be the hardest question for both of you, talking to two book lovers and collectors and sellers. But what are you both reading right now?
I will, Jared, this is funny. I was interrupted in my book. There's a binding issue with the book that I'm reading. And so it jumped. I was in the middle of a short story and it jumped from page like 176 to 208. So I just wrote the publisher to get a replacement. It's called Never Whistle at Night, Indigenous Dark Fiction Anthology. I really love fiction myself, and I'm usually reading a book of fiction alongside other titles that I'm reading to sort of
Yeah, me too. Me too.
extricate. I just feel like it's a healthy
Yeah.
release for me. And then, Christopher, what are you reading these days?
Well, I will say, Jared, I love that you in some of the two new books that you put out, and I saw that you mentioned the Looking Closer series and how your new Ion Design
Right.
collection of texts is sort of inspired a bit by that series, which I was also very much a big fan of as I was like in undergraduate and going into graduate school. I had the whole series. I know I have the education of a graphic designer that when I open it up now, I seem to underline every sentence in it.
Yep, sounds
I felt
right.
like everything was very important. And then after a while, as I kept buying them, I was like, is this an essay I've already read? I felt like they were maybe just like remixing them, like different
Yeah.
combinations of them, because I was like true to the series. But currently I've been reading a lot of like old books on type design, so like more from the early 1900s. And I was trying to look up, I think maybe the printing types, their history, forms, and use is one. And it's sort of fascinating, just kind of learning about the history of different metal type. There's been a couple of other really great books that I finished recently about Bodoni, I think, was like that. So I'm just finding myself very, as someone who like was very interested in like very modern contemporary design and loving work that places like MM Paris and Spassky Fisher and all these studios put out, I'm also just finding that I love this kind of early history of like how these typefaces we know are sort of like made, and who's paying to get them to produce, and how is the evolution of their history. I'm just finding myself really drawn to history books and sort of working my way through a large number of them at the moment.
Kathleen, Christopher, I am such a fan of what you both are doing and sort of the service that Drawdown is offering to the graphic design community and to just the design communities generally. This was so fun. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Jared. It was such a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with Kathleen and Christopher Sloboda. It was recorded on February 14th, 2024. Our theme music is by Jeremiah Chu. The show is and always will be free, thanks to the generosity of our Patreon supporters. If you like what we're doing here, I hope you consider supporting us and get bonus content each month. You can follow us across social media at Surface Podcast, and you can listen to all of our previous episodes wherever you get your podcasts and at our website, scratchingthesurface.fm. Thanks for listening.